at the moment. And let me say a word, if I might, about these numbers. The first number that I gave you is what we ought to have done if you just look at the budget in a mathematical way. So what that means is that, you know, at the end of August you want to be at this place, but if there are major income items that might come to you before the end of the year, that figure may be somewhat different. It may be artificially high because you're simply projecting the income over the year divided by 12. So, you know, don't necessarily think that this is absolutely horrible news. It's not necessarily. We're definitely going to be down on income, it would appear, but maybe not as much as it appears at the end of August. And we're going to be fine as an organization. You know, at the end of the year, we'll see how it really all turns out. On the other hand, it's a great signal to us to watch our spending, to try and generate other income, and it helps the board be mindful of that as we make decisions between now and the end of the year. On the expense side of the house, we thought by the end of August we would have spent just about $213,404.24. The reality is that we spent $235,535.44. So we have overspent our projections through August by $22,131.20. I think the board recognizes, and I think you recognize, that we have to watch the amount of money that we're spending. I hope by hearing these numbers, it will help you understand why we may do things a little differently in terms of how we spend money between now and the end of the year, simply because we don't want to overdo it. What else can I say? Now, on the other hand, we have, as you know, a strong portfolio of funds. We have CDs, we have scholarship funds, we have investment accounts, and the investment accounts have been performing very well so far this year. We're getting a fair amount of money back that we lost in 2008. So that's a good thing. We're trying to leave that money alone so that it can continue to build back up to where it was before, so that we don't have to actually realize what we've lost in those accounts. And so far it's working. Keep your fingers crossed, folks, on the stock market. Yes.
I have.
Let's get a mic.
Get
a mic. Hold on.
Oh. I keep the mic running. I'm a pretty good horse, though, I will admit. I think it's wonderful that you brought the year-to-date spend expenses and income. I think what the board could really be helpful to us is if we know the total amount we have, but if you could bring to us the amount of the money that we have that is restricted and the amount of money that is available and what that is, it would help us in our deliberations, and I think it would help the membership in general understand what we have. If we could know, you know, say we have $1 million, just for a round figure, we need to know how much of that million is available,
yeah,
and how much of it is usable, and that'll tell us how soon we better start packing up and bringing our money with us.
That's a good point, Kathy, and we do know that figure, and I'm sorry that it wasn't in the board packet and so forth. I will distribute a report with that information very shortly to the board, so we do know that. It is important, and I agree with you 100%.
Mr. President?
Yes, who seeks the floor?
Lisa Gordon.
Yeah, Lisa, you hang on till you get
a
microphone.
Hold on, mic is coming. Hold on.
We'll get you a microphone.
Once we get back all the money that we've lost and actually make a profit in the stock market, since the stock market is so unstable, has anybody thought about just investing it in CDs so that there's not a possibility of taking a loss? Or is that too unaggressive in with the market?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer. It's a good question, and it's something that the board has thought about in the past and needs to think about again in the future. The topic you're actually raising, Lisa, has to do with the board adopting what we call an investment policy. So if you have $1 million, you decide we'll invest a certain percentage in one way, another percentage in a different way, and so you create what they call a balanced portfolio. And with that, you want to assume some risk. A little risk is good because it may, in fact, generate significant amounts of money for you as an organization. Whether or not we have the correct balance at the moment is difficult to say. We hesitate to move things right now because we do want to decrease the unrealized losses that we've sustained. But I think in the normal course of business for a board, from time to time you examine the investment policy, and we ought to do that in the next 1 or 2 years and decide how we want to handle our investments given the economic climate that we have right now. So overall, I agree with your point 100%. How we do it, I can't say today. The board has to talk about it, I think. There are some fascinating methods right now, types of investment we could look at, for example, where you agree to limit your earnings in a given year. However, you're insured in such a way that even though you're invested in the stock market, you don't take a loss. You retain your principal. That might be something for the board to look at, and there are other options that are coming available now for the board to look at. So thank you for that, and I think you're on the right track. I also want to say that we engaged a new auditor this year, and we've been really behind the eight ball with audits. We struggled terribly through the 2004, 5, and 6 audits, and had a lot of problems. It took a long time, but we got those done. So what that meant was we had still some catch up to do, and I'm glad to say that we have a draft audit to look at. We just got it Monday, so I can't tell you that Jeff and I have looked at it at all, because we haven't really. But we have the draft audit. We're in a position to discuss with the auditor the letters that come pursuant to an audit, and even better than that, Ray Chan has all the numbers he needs to help us file our tax reports with the IRS. So we're doing very well there. We'll be caught up through 2008 when this audit cycle is done. We haven't been so caught up for a long time, so I feel some relief there, and I hope you will as well. And basically, it means that next year we'll only have to pay for one audit. Thank heavens. So it's a way we can reduce some of our expenditures. Mr. President, that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to take any more questions. And thank you all very much.
Okay, are there questions?
I'm sorry, is there a question? No. Okay.
One question.
Yes. Let's wait for this mic.
Jacqueline Jackson. Will we receive the financials on this conference during this session?
I don't think so. No, because we won't really have...
You haven't actualized it.
Looked through the bills and everything, and we won't finish writing the checks to the hotel or get a final bill from the hotel probably for 30 to 60 days.
Okay, thank you.
What is it you were curious about?
Maybe I was just hoping to see if we were on target or we're going to go in the hole with this conference also.
Well, the way we do things right now, conventions cost CCB some money, but that money is already in the budget for 2009. We certainly could at some point in the future prepare a report about what this convention may have cost or what, you know, the previous convention may have cost, if that's what you want to be done.
Yes. Mr. Treasurer?
Yes.
If you do, be sure that you give that to the presidents and the chapters. Or, you know, everybody has the right to write in and get a treasury report from us. Let's don't put what the convention costs us in the BC. A lot of people read who are not our members.
Right.
And I move that the treasurer's report be adopted as read.
Okay. There's a motion and a second.
Accepted.
Any further discussion?
Accepted.
Yeah, I think that's what you said, is accepted. We're going to take that anyway. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the treasurer's report is accepted.
Mr. President?
Yes.
While I have the mic in my hand so people don't have to keep running to me, I would like to say something. Just quickly, I think this is one of the best conventions with a great feeling of camaraderie that I've seen in a long time, and I commend the Fresno people for it. And I want to say how amazed I was to win that prize last night. I was so glad I was sitting down already. But in any case, under normal circumstances, I would want to give that back to you all. But I'm telling you something. Circumstances are not normal for me. The taxes are coming. But then I'm thinking about the property tax. I'm thinking of all the ailments that are increasing. And so I thank you all so much. And I have to say that we and our family sold 10 books. And if we do this again, I hope you'll all try to sell that many and more. And next time we'll try to sell more. And thank you, Kathy. All.
And we are thrilled that you won as well. That is great.
What did I miss?
Sweepstakes. Okay, we're going to say a few more thank yous gradually as time goes on. And one of them, unfortunately, is a person who is trying to catch a train, but we're going to at least recognize her anyway. Camilla Riding has just been a real great addition to our staff. Unfortunately, this is the only convention where you're going to see her, unless we hijack her back to the United States. But she is in the lobby now. She was trying to grab the shuttle to catch the direct train. But she has really worked hard this weekend, not only to wow us all with that great speech of hers Friday night, but also to compile surveys. I want to tell you briefly, she's done some other things too. She has compiled a list, and I know Chris will know, we've been trying to work on this for several years in NELDS, as will Mitch. She's compiled a list of 48 of the 50, actually 49, because District of Columbia is one of them, 49 of the 50 white cane laws. And that's been about, what, 5 years in them?
At least.
Yeah, that's right. And she's done some other things, and she's now going to be compiling this survey that we're doing in conjunction with NFB and other provider organizations. And so on rehab, and I know many of you, I don't know how many, but many of you did fill it out this weekend, and many more hopefully will be able to fill it out in the next few weeks through over the telephone and through accessible formats. So I just want to, in absentia, give a great round of applause for our intern, Camilla Ryan.
Yay.
And I want my strawberry ice cream as well. So that's that. Apparently, no perks. Okay. Have you enjoyed the great wireless mics that we've had this weekend?
Hey.
Well, I want to say a couple more thank yous. First, thank you, as always, to Teresa Santiago for the outstanding work that she's done. To her assistant, Jared, who's just been all over the place as well, and he's done a great job. And then to Mike Keithley, who gave us a donation that was used to buy those wireless mics, these new mics we got. And you know, as Teresa was commenting to me, and it's really true, you can't tell the difference this convention when someone is on wire or wireless, and that is something novel for this organization. So that is great. Okay, we'll do some other thank yous as we go. Next up is Frank Welty. Are you up here?
I am here.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to our outstanding director of advocacy and governmental affairs for his report, Better Late Than Never. Frank Welty. Frank?
Hey.
Jeff, how much time do I have?
You can take a half hour. That was your allotted time, and we'll give it to you.
Okay. Well, we're at in a... let me tell you where we're at right now, and then I'm going to tell you where we see ourselves going in the coming year, and then I'm going to tell you where you fit into that. Now, right now, the state legislature is officially in recess, which means that most of the bills, well, in fact, all of the bills that we were following this year have either passed or they got bundled up in committee somewhere by now. And a number of those may come back in next year's session. And except for some you know, working on the water bill, stuff like that, there's nothing else going on in the state legislature right now. However, the Congress is in session, and there are four bills in Congress that we are supporting. The first one is, and yes, as a reminder, whenever I get up here, you should be ready to take notes. As a reminder, the first bill is H.R. 734. Good for you. The Quiet Car Bill that would call on the Department of Transportation to do a study and set forth some minimum noise standards for quiet cars. And the comparable bill in the Senate is S.841. Where we're at with that right now is trying to get co-sponsors lined up for that bill so that we can get it moved, you know, so we can get it moving. Right now there are about 150 co-sponsors in the House, of which there are 11 California representatives, and there are 13 co-sponsors in the Senate, of which there are zero California senators. And believe me, it's not because we haven't asked them. Then we have H.R. 3101, which is our telecommunications reform bill, which is a whole lot more than just getting video description back, folks, if you didn't realize that. It also includes improved access to communications equipment, like actually having a TV that you can actually know what's going on in the menus, and a whole lot more. And I think there's about something like 13 co-sponsors so far, of which four are Californians, so they have a long way to go on that one. The third bill that we're looking at is really important to our pocketbook, and that is H.R. 571. That is a bill that would liberalize the terms for getting tax deductions on car donations. And you've noticed that our car donations have been way down in the last few years. The main reason for that is not cash for clunkers, folks. The main reason for that is that the tax laws were changed and they basically killed off the tax benefits from donating cars. And this is going to bring some of that back. So we're supporting that. I think there are about 99 co-sponsors right now for that bill. And I think there's 8 Californians that are co-sponsoring that. So we need more co-sponsors, because if that passes, that's going to hopefully jumpstart the car donation programs in the nonprofit world, and that'll be good for us. And the last bill is HR 1708, and its companion bill is S-700. That bill would eliminate that nasty 2-year waiting period for Medicare that you get when you sign up for SSDI. That one has, I think it's 95 co-sponsors, and I think there are about 11 Californians. And Barbara Boxer has co-sponsored the Senate bill in that one. So that's what's going on in the Congress. Now, there are a couple of bills that I just want to mention briefly. I'm not going to go into much detail, just to mention again that we got a resolution through our state legislature, SJR 6, that put the legislature on record in support of the Quiet Car Bill, so that when you tell your member of Congress that you want him or her to sponsor the Quiet Car Bill, don't forget to remind them that the state legislature is on record in support of it too. Also, we had other bills that we supported was SB 475, which raised the fee that guide dog schools pay to support the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. And we supported that bill. And then there was AB 386, which liberalized the definition of college educational materials that should be made accessible, not just textbooks. There wasn't really much in that bill for blind people this go around, but we supported it because we felt that we were building relationships with the community colleges and others that we will be able to use later to get more video description in educational materials. And there are other bills that we were looking at, but in the interest of time, I'm going to encourage you to follow my legislative report that you can get by calling the CCB 800 number, 800-221-6359. And instead of pressing option 2 to get the California connection, you can press option 5 to get the legislative report. And so you can get all the details with that in the report. We also post that report on our website, and I usually post that report to the CCB's email list, which will be back up and running soon. And I encourage you to keep track of those. Now, moving forward, we expect to have a busy year of legislative advocacy. There are several things that we already have in mind, and I suspect that the resolutions we talk about in the next hour will give us a few more things on our plate. But let me tell you what we have lined up right now. Early this year, we tried to get a sponsor for a bill that would make state regulations easier for blind people to read. Currently, they're published in a way that's hard for a blind person to see what's changed and what's deleted in regulation changes. And so we're going to try and get a sponsor for that bill. We also want to revisit a bill that we tried to get through the legislature, I think it was last year, that would require that agencies that get state funds would have to have 20% of their boards be blind people. What a concept. Well, we didn't get it through last time, but we're thinking we're going to try and give it another shot. And then, okay, if you've been listening to Jeff and Mitch this weekend and elsewhere, you know that the business enterprise program as it exists in California is not what it ought to be. And we're not happy about that, and we're not going to take that lying down. So we're working We're working closely with the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California to put forth a legislative strategy to get that program turned around. We've got a couple ideas. You're probably going to see a major resolution at the spring convention that's going to really detail the concerns we have with the program. We're looking at that being the basis for possible reform legislation. We also want to see if we can get a legislative hearing where vendors can come to Sacramento and tell what's really going on in the program. So we want to get that thing moving in the right direction. Those of you who are regular readers of The Blind Californian may recall that Rick Boggs did a fascinating series of articles on the problem of discrimination against blind people in the entertainment industry. In response to that, you're going to hear a resolution today that sets forth some ideas we have about addressing that problem, because the way I see it, given the importance of the entertainment industry in the state of California, and given that our unemployment rate is 70%, how can we expect to overcome our high unemployment rate if such a big industry in California isn't doing its part? We're going to see what we can do about that. Now, folks, there's an alleged old Chinese proverb, or an old, alleged old Chinese curse that says, "May you live in interesting times." We are living in interesting times. This is not a time for apathy. Every one of us needs to become an advocate, not just one guy in Sacramento. We need an army of advocates spread throughout the state of California. And that means you, not the guy in front of you, not the woman to your right, you, every one of you here. And not only that, but the people who left on the train last night. So go home and tell them. Now, I want to give you 7 steps to building that army of advocates. And I'm going to do this in the way of questions. And if you answer yes to this question, I want you to clap your hands. Question number 1. Does your chapter have a legislative chair? That's good. I need to hear about who they are. And thank you for those that have already told me. And if your chapter does not yet have a legislative chair, get one quick, like in the next week, and let me know who that person is. And when I ask that question in the spring, I want everybody to clap their hands. Question number 2. Do you follow the California Connection and the CCB legislative report on a regular basis? Good. Keep it up. 3. Now I'm going to get a little tougher. Uh-oh. Are you ready? Do you know which assembly district, which state senate district, and which U.S. House of Representative district number you live in, and who represents you in those districts?
The number?
You have a homework assignment, folks.
Good.
Because how can you possibly be an advocate on our legislative issue if you don't even know who you're supposed to call? So find that out this week and write it down so that you don't forget, because I don't keep numbers like that in my head either. So I have to have it written down. So when I ask that question, I want all of you to be able to clap your hands in the spring. In fact, if I ask you in 2 weeks, I'd like you to be able to clap your hands on that one. Four, do you follow what your legislature is what your member of the legislature is doing? Ah, we're getting heifer now. We're getting to the hardcore poor folks here. Now, we are, as blind people, we are in a golden age for being able to do that. For a long time, most legislators send out mailings of what they're doing. Of course, you know, it's kind of propaganda pieces, but at least there's some information in there. You know, at least let you know when they're going to be having town hall meetings and whatnot. And what's great is a lot of them now have email lists where they send out that information, which is if you've been avoiding getting into computers, that's a good reason to do so. So, folks, I encourage all of you to get plugged into whatever information is coming out of your legislators' offices, because it's usually free and they're happy to send it out to you. Just get on their mailing list, get on their email list, so that you can kind of find out where they stand on issues, when they're having town meetings, when they're going to be on vacation, you know, and whatever. And also, there are technologies now, whether it's by surfing the web or by signing up for NFB Newsline, where you have access to news more than we ever did before. And I encourage you as much as you can to get in the habit of hunting out news about what your legislature members are doing, so that you can be informed about these people. Five, how many of you have actually met either your legislator or a member of their staff? I want to tell you a couple stories about that, because that's more important than you might think. We have a member up in Northern California, up in Humboldt County area. I'm not sure if she's up that far north, but up in the northern part of California, Jane Cardis. Ukiah, that's right. She is great. She goes to town hall meetings. She goes when the legislator member is putting on their community barbecues. Those people know Jane Cardis. And a few weeks ago, Jane Cardis actually got her assembly member, Wes Chesbro, to stop by her house. And while she and so she called me that morning and said, he's coming to my house. Call me at 3:45 and you'll get to talk to him. So I did. And I want to tell you another story, is that for years, Steve Fort and Kathy Skivers have been going to the town hall meetings of Congressman Pete Stark. Well, you know what? A few years back, Pete Stark introduced an accessible currency bill in Congress, and the name on that bill was a certain Kathy Skivers. And this summer, Kathy Skivers, I had the privilege of going with Kathy Skivers to visit with a member of Pete Stark's staff about our legislative concerns, and he was, by that time, he was already sponsoring the quiet car bill. He's now sponsoring the video, the communications bill too, because we had somebody there that he was already plugged in with in his district. It matters. And don't think you have to be a lawyer or a high-priced lobbyist. The point is, when my goal is that when any bill comes before our state legislature or our Congress, I want every one of our representatives to think of, to have the image of a member of CCB in their minds when they're thinking about that bill. You know, somehow I think that if every member of our state legislature actually knew a member of one of our members who might be receiving SSI, maybe they wouldn't have voted for those SSI cuts this year. I can hope anyway. I think that's important. Number six, have you recently, even fairly recently, invited one of your legislators to one of your chapter events?
Bob Builder.
Hey, good for you. I mean, talk about getting a chance for them to know you. Consider doing that. You know, most all of our chapters have a summer picnic and a holiday party, right? Well, how about writing a letter to the office of your legislators and invite them to come and get in the habit of just doing that routinely? And if they say yes, try to get the papers out there so he can get some good photo ops. Hey, you scratch his back, he'll scratch yours, right? And so I encourage you to do these things. And I'm going to ask number 7, and this is not one I'm going to ask you for an answer for, but it's one something that I want you to, I'd like you to consider taking back to your chapters at your November meetings as you're getting ready to look at your chapter budgets for 2010. As those of you who attended the CCB Morehead meeting know, that due to our financial situation, CCB is not going to be in a position to sponsor a group of advocates to go to the ACB Washington seminar next year. And believe me, I know that the board wasn't happy about that. So I'm issuing a challenge to you chapters. And please, I encourage you that are here to take this back to your November chapter meetings. Look at what you can do in your 2010 budgets to help to sponsor CCB members to go back to Washington, because it's worth it. Some of you chapters that are bigger could probably sponsor one or two of your own members to go. But if you're not a big chapter and you don't have a big budget, could you maybe scrounge up $100? You know, so that, you know, if a half dozen chapters put in $100, $200, you could send some, you know, we could sponsor somebody going to Washington. Think about that seriously. It would be a big help to us. Now again, just in closing, let me reiterate, this is not a time for complacency. It's not a time for apathy. What it is time for is for all of you to take heart, to take heed to what we've talked about this morning, and to take this message back to your chapters and get everybody involved in becoming the army of advocates that's going to take back California for blind Californians. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. That was great. Okay. Yes, we really don't have time for questions, though. But we'll make give a comment. Yeah.
You all know that we're meeting in San Francisco in the spring. And we usually Burlingame. Well, it's close to San Francisco. It's in that backyard. Anyway, we usually have had a day at the Cal State Capitol with that very good program we have coming up to go to the legislature this year. I think we need to talk to our chapters about making preparation to try to get somebody to be able to go to that spring Capitol Day, which I assume we're going to have.
I hope so.
Now, I want you all to know that this is probably my last time I'll be involved in reporting to you as chair of the Governmental Affairs Committee. I've been there for a long time, almost as long as I've been around, I think. But anyway, it's being in the hands of Donna Pomerantz will be taking over for me as chair. She knows where it's at. She knows what to do. And Frank, you just heard, he sure knows where he's at and what to do. Yep. And with that and the terrific office staff we have, and Jeff, Lily really is a Lily. She's a great gal. We have such a good staff, and with all of you going back and working to help us with legislation, that is the main focus of this organization, always has been, and if we want to survive, it's going to have to be. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to say, in response to that, you know, Kathy and I don't always agree, just like Mitch and Kathy didn't always agree, but it has been such a pleasure to, over the last 7 years, I guess, to have had Kathy to work with as governmental affairs chair to get the guidance from her. We agree, I don't know, 90% of the time, and to shoot things off of her and to have her to be able to also connect with our governmental affairs director. And, you know, Kathy's wisdom is really, it's beyond measure. And so I just want to say how much of a pleasure it has been to work with her in that position. So. I know about that. And I want to add, with respect to the future, that I intend to get together with Donna and Frank, and we'll definitely have a meeting in early January, I think, to plan the logistics for Capital Day, whether it ought to be, well, when, how, what, where, why, all that. And so we'll definitely be moving in that direction for next year. So Donna's got a lot of work ahead of her. Yes, another comment.
Can I make one real quick comment?
Sure.
I, too, would like to thank Kathy Skivers, this is Dan Kaiser, for everything she's done for me over the years. I think it was more than seven, but I learned so much from Kathy, and I would not have been governmental affairs director probably as long as I was if it wasn't for Kathy. And the guidance she gave me, really was key for my success. So, Kathy, thank you, and I wish you the best of luck.
See what he said there is he had to put up with me, but somehow Kathy made it doable.
Well, I learned a lot from you too, Jeff.
Okay. We're now going to move along. We'll do some more thank yous in a minute. We'll move along to the finish of our Constitution and Bylaws report, and we'll go back to the chair of that committee, Jerry Consler. Jerry?
Thank you, Mr. President. Frank and Door prizes are a tough act to follow. Before I give my very brief report, I would like to say that how much I appreciate the manner in which our president conducted the very difficult voting situation yesterday. Democracy in action. I think he should be commended for that. Our committee met on Friday, as we always do, and had an excellent meeting. One of our members, Abby Vincent, has resigned from the committee. And President Tom has appointed a new member, David Jackson, and we welcome him. He's already shown that he's going to be a very valuable member of the committee. If any of the rest of you are interested in serving on our committee, please notify President Tom so that you can be considered. An amendment was proposed at the convention in the spring and presented to the convention. It is now time to vote on that. It was offered to us by Frank Welty. And it concerns Article 7, Section 7.1, which reads, any resident of the state of California who has reached the age of 16 years is eligible to become a voting member of the California Council of the Blind upon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I won't read the whole thing. The proposal is to remove the residency requirement so that it would now read, any person who has reached the age of 16 years is eligible to become a voting member. So the committee considered this, and the committee unanimously recommends that you pass on this proposed amendment. So.
Okay, so the committee has recommended to do pass, so it does not need a motion. At least that's the way I'm instructed by our national parliamentarian. Is that not right, Mr. Pomerantz?
I believe that's correct.
So. Well, we could say that, yes. So he's so moved.
Second.
So you don't need that second. You don't need that. All right. So is there any discussion? Is there any discussion?
I just have a question.
Okay.
I just want to...
Who are you?
This is Rob Turner, and
I guess the only concern I have is I want to make sure I understand the implications of this more fully. So obviously, it means that anybody could join that's 16 or older from anywhere in the world. The only question I would have is, are these members... are we talking about them joining chapters and voting and so forth? I'm just wondering about, is someone from Nevada or are these non-residents, are they all able to vote? And is this introducing a possible risk of... is there any?
Let me probably not.
I mean, it does seem a bit far fetched, but I just want to make sure that I understand, what the thought process was. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to let one of the advocates talk, and then I'll answer some factually rather than advocate. Okay, go ahead, Frank.
Rob, technically, you're right. I mean, theoretically. Somebody could get 8 or 10 busloads of people from Phoenix come down to one of our conventions, and assuming that they had paid dues, do some nonsense. Theoretically, they'd have to probably bring at least 300 to pull off such a thing. But theoretically, however, the reason I recommended this change is very simple. Technically. If you're not a California resident, you are not allowed to join CCB, which means that Al and Connie Gill are here illegally.
They're illegal aliens, man.
I think we need to fix that.
Okay, now let me just make one comment, point of information. This wouldn't preclude chapters that have constitutions from saying we are limiting our chapters to members that live in X area.
Yes.
So that this amendment would not affect any chapters' current or future decision in that area.
Mr. President?
Okay, yeah, Kathy?
Long ago, and not too long ago, we had a problem wherein some people went out and would go to chapters, pay their dues, and change anything that happened in the chapter. For now, I think that California is responsible for Californians. We are responsible. And I think several chapters, I know Bayview, we have, San Francisco, I think, is where Al and Connie belong. And we have members who belong or live in Arkansas who still pay dues. But they're in Philadelphia. But the thing of it is, I do not like this amendment because I think this is a California organization. We've got to make sure, and don't say that it only takes 300. Don't you ever think that they won't someday load up buses if they want to and come in and ruin your convention. They did it once. It happened before. It could happen again. And I think we should keep the California membership to the California membership. And, of course, the individual chapters can have people come in their constitution. They can still join, but we have to keep control of this organization.
All right. I am going to turn over the debate to Gabe Griffiths so I can speak.
Okay, and I thank you, Jeff, and I will propose to handle this debate I guess like we did yesterday. I don't know if we necessarily need a time limit like we did yesterday, but we'll try to alternate between one for and one against. We're not going to go with pros and cons here today. So we've had one for and one against, and now I will recognize Jeff Tom to speak. What are you speaking for, Jeff?
I'm a pro.
Okay.
And I'll
you're in favor.
I'll limit my comments to probably one sentence. If this amendment does not pass, I will make sure that your Arkansas members, that Marlene O'Neill, and that the Collies and the Gills are kicked out. Because, no, well, I'll make it two sentences. If that's going to be the policy of this organization, then we need to apply it. Otherwise, this organization is, we tend to monitor ourselves sufficiently. We only have a very few people. This is not a serious problem. But if that's the policy we want, then I'm going to apply it, and I'm going to make sure there are no members that have voting privileges from other states. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Who's that calling for the floor?
I had the mic, but I'm a pro, so did you want an against first?
Do we have anybody else speaking against?
Yes, Dan.
Okay, Artis, I'll recognize you after Dan. But Artis, we just had Jeff speaking for, and Artis is also going to speak for, so
okay.
I'm going to recognize Dan to speak against.
All right. The other issue that this could make a problem is officers. And you could be holding up an officer position if they move out of state, and you're stuck.
We have that right now.
Well, no, I'm talking about the state. The state officers. The individual. But I always thought the Constitution trumped chapter affiliate constitutions. That's what I thought, too. It does. So I think whoever made the point about I think it was Jeff made the point about the affiliate constitutions. You might want to check with the parliamentarian, but I think they would be trumped. I just think it leads to a bunch of problems. Thank you.
I think we're talking to join the state organization versus chapters.
That's right. The chapter could still...
Yes.
I want to know under how, when the chapters have already some of these members, and we have Catherine Johnson and others, where is it say in the Constitution that if this doesn't pass, you can throw them out?
We have to, because we haven't been applying the Constitution correctly. They're not residents of California. We've never really applied it, Kathy. I'm the first one to admit it. But if that's what we want to do, and then that's what we'd have to do. And in response to Dan's question, which is a legitimate question, there's nothing that says that a chapter could not limit its own geographical membership if this were to pass. Only that CCB would have to allow somebody, if they wanted to join them as a member, to do so. But the chapter could still put geographical limits
on
this particular chapter.
My last comment on this is that you better not let the Federation find out you're passing this. You might have a great influx of members one fine day. They did it once before.
Go
ahead, Artis.
I'm pro because I know I'm a member of Washington State Council. I'm also a member of Iowa, where I moved from. And I think if people are concerned, you could add a little friendly amendment to it, saying limiting it to a certain percentage of the organization's membership, and that way it would alleviate some of the people's concern.
If I may, for a point of information.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
I attempted to examine the extant constitutions of the other states, and I got through about half of them. I found no other state with a residency requirement. And part of the momentum of saying that this should be changed is that you cannot have a document that is inconsistent with the policies of the organization. Cannot have that. Cannot stand.
Is that Sheila?
Yes. So, Sheila Gunn Cushman, my question is, we live in Sacramento and 2 hours away is Reno, Nevada, and I could see somebody working as a state worker maybe in, I don't know, then they move to Nevada because it's cheaper or something. So, what about people who are living in one state but working in our state, and is there anything about that, and maybe could we solve it that way?
Well, the language says resident. Any resident, and that is, residency is defined by voting district in the state of California.
Mr. Chairman?
Do we have, I think that's Mitch I hear yelling. Are you speaking for or against Mitch?
For.
Before we have you speak, do we have anybody else that wishes to speak in opposition to this?
Yes.
Is that Dirk?
Yes.
Okay, we'll have Dirk speak and then Mitch.
I am concerned about the 16-year thing. That's why I say no. In 1869, the age of consent for a young lady was 10 years old.
Dirk.
Anyway, I think that if
Dirk, I believe this is out of order, Dirk. The amendment is not dealing anything with the age requirement. That is not the issue under debate here today.
It's the word 16 years
But Dirk, the age of 16 is I'm hearing it said that it's an ACB policy, or 16 is an ACB policy. It's not part of the proposed amendment. It's not under debate here today. We're debating the issue of residency, not age requirements.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Indulge me one more minute, Mitch. Is there anybody else wishing to speak in opposition?
I don't want to.
Okay. I'm not hearing.
Point of information, though.
Okay. Gene, what's your point of information?
Sorry, Mitch. I'm embarrassed to say that it's been a while since I've looked at the bylaws and Constitution, but isn't the problem resolved by persons? Don't we have associate membership? Don't we have that classification? And the only thing that you have all the privileges and rights except for voting, and is...
That doesn't solve the issue.
Okay, and I guess the thing is, rather than it would seem that persons who would be desire to be involved with an organization members, and if unless they haven't, they don't mind about voting, could go into that classification of an associate member.
Gene, is this a point of information, or is this
point?
A
I'm not arguing. I'm just asking. Isn't that available? I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember the Constitution. It's been a while since I reviewed it.
Jerry, do you know?
I don't have that in front of me, but that's a different category of membership. It's not like being a regular voting member.
Okay.
To my knowledge, there are only three types of regular voting members: a chapter member, a special interest or statewide affiliate member, and a member at large.
Okay, because I thought that would allow anyone.
I don't know of any others that are voting members.
Okay, I thought that that would resolve the issue of people who live out of state, that they wanted to be a member of the organization, that they could then apply for that classification. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Actually, Mitch has been trying to call from the floor, so without any other oppositions coming up, Mitch, I'd like to hear you speak, and then we'll call for the question.
Colleagues, Jeff is absolutely right. If we don't amend the Constitution, then he does have to enforce it. Otherwise, why have a Constitution? This, also not passing this, discriminates. Why? Because we have students who come from other states. We are trying to recruit students. Do we want to exclude students who are going through a master's and a PhD program, might be going to a state school for 5, 6, 7 years, and tell them they can't join because they live in Arizona? And my final comment, folks, is we're smarter than the black helicopter crowd. No one is going to come in with 3 busloads of blind Nevadans and take over this affiliate.
Okay. Thank you for everybody for the debate, and I believe we've had the call for the question requested. So the motion before us is to accept the proposed constitutional amendment eliminating the residency requirement in the Constitution to become a full voting member. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I do believe the ayes carried.
Okay.
And I will now pass it back over to Jeff.
Jerry, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. That concludes my report. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jerry. And do we have a motion for acceptance of the Constitution and Bylaws report?
So moved.
Any discussion?
Mr. President,
well, it's too late, actually, because the vote has already been taken. So it's too late. I've done that before, too. So, all those in favor of the acceptance of the report, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Thank you, Jerry, very much, and thank you for
abstentions.
The debate. Abstentions. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Couple more thank yous. Oh, we have now back in the room, I wasn't very helpful today. I caused her to miss her train, although not for this reason. But we have Camilla in the room, and I'm going to give her a chance to say a word or two to you. So, Camilla?
Yeah. I have a mic. Yeah, hi. I would just like to say thanks again for giving me the opportunity of being your intern. It has been really great so far, and it's been very interesting to be to come to this convention and to meet all of you and have a talk with you and show you my money and meet you in the bar and do surveys and all that. It has been really great, and I look forward to work with you the next 2 months. So thank you.
Thank you, Camilla. All right. So, okay. Yes, we have a point of information out there.
I'm more than enjoy CTV now.
That's right. We're going to establish a Denmark chapter. That's right. The Copenhagen Convention. And so we could do it with a cruise. We were going to do the cruise thing, remember? We could do that. Cruise over there. Okay, so a couple more thank yous, and I'll turn it over to Gabe here. Because I want to get these thank yous done before I forget. Boy, what would we do without the great work of the host chapter, the Greater San Joaquin chapter? Oh, man. President Tom Randall, Mary Beth Randall. There's so many. Tony Ames, what an incredible thing to have seen her at this convention and all the work she did. Steve Frazier, Heather McKenzie, so many, many. I'm sure I missed some. And to the extent I did, Tom, you'll convey our regards to them. But they did just a great, great amount of work and helped to make this convention what it is. And finally, and I know I've missed some folks, but we owe such a debt of gratitude to our staff, you know, not only to Frank and Camilla that we've already heard from today, but obviously to Ed Branch. Wasn't it great last night? Getting him up there and making him sweat a little bit and giving him that little surprise. That was great. And what, guys, Ed just does so much work for these conventions. You do not know how much behind the scenes work and how much staff time goes into these conventions. And finally, our newest member, and you've all gotten a chance to know her this weekend, and you're going to get continue to get that chance. Let's hear it for all the hard work that she's done, Lily McRae. So. All right, so all those fundraising ideas that we got to do so that we can keep these two conventions going, let's get them to Lily so that we can work on them next year and work with the fundraising committee. So, all right.
Mr.
So,
Chair,
yes.
This is a point of information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've learned.
Sometimes. My wife doesn't say that. I just wanted to say that the little mix-up last night, and I did want to straighten it out because I wanted to say Mary Beth and Pam were the two people that did the trick-and-treat bags last night when you went to the banquet.
Oh,
so I wanted to get
hey.
That. It was the two of them that got together and did the whole thing. And we were up till 2 in the morning the night before. They were up till 2. They kept me up, but they did it.
They were wonderful.
And I didn't get any chocolate.
Wonderful. Oh.
Poor King.
I know.
All right. So we're now going to turn it over to the chair of our resolutions committee, Gabe Griffith.
Okay. Wow. I feel like I haven't gotten to talk to you guys in so long. Before we get into the resolutions, I'd like to thank the resolutions committee, and I should have written this down. I didn't, so hopefully members in here will correct or help me if I miss anyone. This weekend we had Dirk Neihardt, Linda Perrell, who I would be in much trouble if I forgot, Charles Navarrete, Gene Lozano, Robert Wendt, and our newest resolutions member, the president-elect of the Blind Students of California, Lena, is it Bandy? Am I missing any members of the committee that were here this weekend? Marvelena Gray. I knew I was going to forget somebody. Happens every year. So I think that was the members. Thank you. It's a great committee. I'm lucky to be able to work with them. We also had, I believe she's our honorary member, Trish Leitz, who just is incredible coming in and spending so much time helping out and running for refreshments. And, you know, that's much appreciated. Members from the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California who stayed up with us last night. Let's see, who else? Becky Wells, who came in at my request to help us with an issue. I dragged her down there for a little while last night, so thank you. Anybody else that I'm forgetting?
I was there for a while.
Oh, Jeff came and took a nap with us. He took a nap while we worked. Frank Welty came in and joined us. Frank reminded me he took a nap too. So, and if I missed anybody, I apologize. But thank you to who's that?
Glenda.
Oh, Glenda. Yes, Glenda was there. So, thank you to everybody. It's just it's an important and very important process, so thank you. Now getting into the resolutions, we have 13 resolutions for you today. Two of those have been withdrawn. So, actually, we had 13 resolutions submitted. Two were withdrawn, and two of those are the appreciation resolutions. So, we have 9 full resolutions, I guess, substantial resolutions to bring to you. Resolution 2009-B1 was dealing with rehab counselor caseloads, and that was withdrawn after some discussion with Kathy Bales, who is here. So that was a good dialogue. So that was withdrawn. So the first resolution we have for you this morning is Resolution 2009-B2, which is Blind Field Services clerical staff. Okay. Oh, readers, I'm sorry, reader services and streamlining the process. I'm sorry. Clerical staff is coming up later. I'm sorry. It was streamlining the reader services process. Thank you. Thank you for that. What did I say, caseloads? Okay.
One that's been...
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about this morning. Okay, so... actually, this one is clerical stuff. What am I talking about? I don't know. Okay, let's begin reading. Whereas Blindfield Services, BFS, was established in 2002 in order to bring about consistent, high-quality rehabilitation services to blind and visually impaired Californians. And whereas BFS is one of 14 districts within the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, providing services to approximately 4,500 of the department's 80,000 clients. And whereas the approximately 65 counseling staff who comprise BFS are scattered throughout the state and housed in offices belonging to the other 13 districts. And whereas, due to the often idiosyncratic nature of each district, BFS counselors and supervisors must follow policies enacted by their housing district that are often at odds with BFS policy. And whereas the space, equipment, and clerical staff assigned to these counselors and supervisors belongs to these other districts. And whereas each of these 13 districts is controlled by a separate district administrator and clerical supervisor. And whereas each district interprets and implements department policy according to the diverse philosophies of each district administrator. And whereas each district has its own accounting unit, thus allowing it to process invoices, issue payments directly to vendors and consumers through a variety of methods. And whereas BFS counselors and supervisors must cooperate with each of these various districts as to the policies, procedures, and practices of each district. And whereas, in light of the recent department business model change from providing services via contract to paying for them via a fee-for-service arrangement, many DOR vendors are experiencing extreme delays in payments for services rendered. And whereas it appears that BFS managers must foster a sense of goodwill with the management of their housing districts, it is not uncommon for BFS counselors to be held to unreasonable standards not enforced in other districts. And whereas the current technology exists to provide all BFS staff with designated clerical support, and whereas it has never been proven that such an arrangement would lead to an increased cost in the operation of the agency, and whereas it is extremely challenging for such a far-flung district to develop a cohesive, teamwork-oriented identity, when counselors must borrow staff and equipment from the larger agency. And whereas the current arrangement has led to a perception of a separate but not equal treatment of BFS counselors and consumers. Now, therefore, be it resolved, and listen up because this section is one I'm going to read once. the boilerplate by the California Council of the Blind and convention assembled this first day of November 2009 at the Radisson Hotel and Convention Center in the city of Fresno, that this organization urged the Department of Rehabilitation to immediately develop a committee to explore the issue of providing BFS with designated clerical staff, including procurement technicians, a centralized accounting unit, and check writing and invoice processing equipment. And be it further resolved that this committee be comprised of at least four counselors so as to obtain a diversity of informed opinion from the field. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay, there's a motion. We now will take any discussion on the resolution. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right, Gabe, the resolution is adopted. Move on to the next one.
Okay, resolution 2009-B3. BFS counselor caseloads. This is the one that I was mistakenly saying earlier. Where's the purpose for the establishment of Blind Field Services, BFS, was to bring about consistency in the delivery of rehabilitation services to blind and visually impaired Californians. And whereas, as published in Plan Progress Report, there continues to be, from year to year, a considerable disparity in caseload sizes between counselors within BFS, with some counselors carrying as many as 175 cases or more, and others carrying as few as 20 cases. And whereas, as stated in longitudinal study of the Vocational Rehabilitation VS Services Program, third final report, the context of VR services, the average caseload size of blind and visually impaired specialist counselors across the United States is 50 cases. And whereas it is generally recognized among professionals in the rehabilitation field that blindness specialty caseloads require significantly more attention from counselors than do generalist caseloads due to the specialized needs of this population. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization urge the Department of Rehabilitation DOR, Deputy Director of Specialized Services, and the Program Manager of BFS to implement proactive strategies for balancing caseload sizes and responsibilities. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
All right. Seems to me the only problem the department has with this is that they use base 10 as opposed to base 1. Maybe they have a lot less of a disparity. Okay, so is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? The resolution is adopted. Okay, next resolution.
Okay, resolution 2009-B4 is Braille and the Ziegler Magazine. And this was submitted to us actually by two different affiliates. It was the Braille Revival League of California and the San Diego chapter of CCB. So we had two different chapters independently submit the resolution. So here we go. Whereas for over 100 years, the Matilda Ziegler magazine for the blind has been distributed in the United States, being the first Braille magazine of its kind available 12 times each year and covering a wide variety of subjects. And whereas, in the October 2009 issue, the editor announced that the November 2009 issue would be the last one published in Braille and on audio cassettes. And whereas, it was also announced that further issues will be published in email and online, I'm sorry, in email and on the internet, limited to blindness-related issues. And whereas many people throughout the world, both with and without access to the internet, treasure the Braille and audio cassette issues they receive. And whereas just a few years ago, a former editor of the Ziegler wrote a memorable biography of Louis Braille. And whereas any development that discourages Braille literacy conflicts with the proud tradition of Ziegler's stated purpose to distribute embossed Braille, especially in this bicentennial year of the birth of Louis Braille. And whereas, although there are very few magazines with general interest articles being published in both Braille and on audio cassette, many organizations of and for the blind have a website with blindness-related content. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization strongly urge the board of directors of the Ziegler magazine to reconsider its decision to change both content and choice of media. And be it further resolved that this organization call upon the board of directors of the Ziegler magazine to survey readers' preferences, and that a report of the findings, along with an explanation for whatever changes are recommended by the survey, be made available to be made to major organizations of and for the blind. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay, there's a motion. Discussion.
I have a question on this. I don't have a problem with them publishing a study or whatever, but the question relates to if they're doing this because of cost. I don't know. I guess I would be a little inclined to. The problem is, I think if they would allow subscriptions for Braille editions or subscriptions across the board, then, you know, perhaps it would be something they could do. But if people are protesting this because it's something that costs them too much, I think you have to keep in mind that a publication cannot keep going on if they're losing money. So I don't have a problem with getting a report, but I think we need to be careful to imply that, you know, no matter what, that they have to, you know, provide it in a format.
Okay. We'll get Kathy and Mike.
This magazine has been funded since its beginning from a trust left by Matilda Ziegler. And I think maybe if we could put a friendly amendment in here where we were talking, where we asked the board of directors to reconsider this, I think we should say somewhere in the resolution that there was even, I don't know where it goes, but it's right where we could say without consultation with a readership to see if they would be willing to pay for the magazine. We never even had a chance to say anything about it. We just got the October issue that said the November issue would be the last. And they never asked if anybody like the Our Special is published, and everybody, it's a women's magazine, but we all pay so much for six issues, and like $15 maybe for every six issues, and a year for subscription. And they didn't even give us the opportunity to do that. And that's what I think was bad. I think it's somewhere it should say without consultation or allowing the readership to contribute to the cost by subscriptions.
Okay, so Gabe, is that considered a friendly amendment by the...
Well, it wasn't very good when it went all over the
place.
Well,
I know, but first, before we get to phrasing it...
I'd like that to be a friendly amendment.
I think it would be a friendly amendment, and I'm kind of trying to think. I think maybe at the point where it says that the editor announced... maybe say, you know, the editor announced that without consulting its readership, it has been decided that the November issue would be the last. Would
consideration of asking its readership.
Would something along that phraseology work for you in that place, Kathy?
I think it would. I don't think that's so much they had to ask us. I think it's you're on the right track, Gabe, that they did not consult with the readership as to possibilities of continuing the magazine. How about that?
Gabe, how about when you do the study, including the study, and that the study include whether or not readers would be willing to pay for a prescription?
That's
subscription,
good.
Sorry.
That's good.
Something like that.
Okay. We can do that.
Marlene O'Neill from BRLC. I believe, too, that the problem is, not the problem, but... Matilda Ziegler said when she had an endowment that no one was to be charged for the Matilda Ziegler, and I think that's the problem. So, I mean, I'm all for paying the subscription, but this is the problem that we're finding right now.
Well, then we can leave the subscription out and take what Dave first had and consult with the readership.
Mr. President?
Jeff, would that work?
That's already in there because you've already said you want them to do a study. Unless you want to wear ads clause.
No, I'd like it to say that this was done without prior...
without consulting the readership.
Consulting the readership. As a possible alternatives.
Right. In the whereas, I think it was the second or third whereas that the editor announced that the November issue will be the last one. Yeah, I think that's a friendly amendment, and we can put that in there, Kathy.
Thank you.
And then I think, was it David?
Yeah, Mr. President, this is David Hanlon. If I recall, and this may be part of your study, too, and we need to hold their feet to the fire, but didn't the NFB pass the Louis Braille bill in order to generate income for Braille? Well then
that's
we need
really
to hold their feet to the fire and have their
David, money. That's kind of irrelevant because none of that money is going to NFB and none of that is going to be seen by the folks who do the Matilda Ziegler. So
right. Okay, I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah. Okay, all right, moving on. Anyone else? Okay. I'm not gonna oppose this resolution.
Can I make
Sure. We'll get to you.
I just was wondering. This is Penny, and I was just wondering.
Pardon your name?
Penny Valdovinos from Bakersfield. I was just wondering if because there's an issue with the subscription. A lot. It's the verbiage and stuff to say pay for a subscription. Could you might put in the amendment the. Message that maybe if we could solicit a donation instead of a subscription, because that's how we do a lot of raffles. It's a donation, not prices.
So you are a friendly amendment that would be, instead of using prescriptions, I don't know how I get that, subscription, including solicitation of donations.
All right.
I think that would be a friendly amendment, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then the other
in the resolved clause, and Kathy's amendment would be a whereas about how they did it without consulting the members, readership.
And the other thing to remember is that it may not have anything to do with funding. Yeah, they're just announcing that it's not being published. I don't think they said why.
Yeah, it does.
Does it say?
And
okay.
I'm not going to oppose this resolution, but if what they say is really true, and they can't afford to do it, then I think Artis makes a good point. But nonetheless, it doesn't hurt to write them and show them how much we care about this. So, is that a call for the question? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right. The resolution is passed. Well, that's okay. I mean, it's done. Unless it's extraordinarily important. I mean, the resolution is passed, and you know. Okay, next resolution.
Next resolution is 2009B5, Business Enterprise Program Consultants. Whereas the first line of contact for the Business Enterprise Program for the Blind, BEP, vendors, and the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, is through each vendor's Business Enterprise Consultant, BEC. And whereas BECs serve at least two important functions, that of assisting the vendor to maximize his or her operation and ensuring that vendors do not violate program requirements. And whereas, although some BECs are achieving this latter goal, it is almost uniformly the complaint of vendors that BECs rarely provide effective assistance to vendors. And whereas one of the primary reasons for the adoption of SB 105 was the need to ensure a client-centered focus among department employees serving blind and visually impaired clients. And whereas ongoing training of blind field services counselors reflects to some extent a recognition of that need. And whereas similar efforts have not been undertaken with respect to BECs, and whereas the lack of proactive assistance being provided by BECs greatly weakens the program and creates a far more difficult job for administrators who may be attempting to improve it. Now, therefore, be it resolved. By this organization, that the department undertake expeditious efforts to attempt to ensure that BECs focus their efforts on providing a proactive assistance to BEP vendors. And be it further resolved that these efforts include client services training in order to educate BECs about their appropriate role and how best to achieve it. Committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have one question. Was there a second?
There doesn't. You don't need one.
Check your whereases. I think some of them you said consultant, and there's one where you said counselor.
Yes, one of the whereases actually applies to counselors, because the point is that counselors have received far more training. We don't know whether the BECs have received either any or none, but that is the reason that one refers to counselors.
Dan back here.
The last whereas column, you said attempted, Gabe, and then I didn't hear that last word after attempt.
I think it's to improve it. We'll change it to BEP.
Okay, because it was unclear. The other thing is this is a very... I'm sorry things haven't changed from when I was in the program, because I thought always the weak link was the BEC. Well, it was one of the weak links in BEP, but the BECs just don't do anything. And you know, in the 70s, a couple BECs were caught in the movie theaters during the day, not even working, and I think one of them was fired and one of them's still there, unfortunately. But the BECs are a weak link, and I really think this is a great resolution. Thanks.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The resolution is adopted. Okay. Gabe, next resolution.
Okay. The next resolution is 2009 B6 Shared Space. And this came to us from Gene Lozano. Whereas the concept of shared spaces originated in Europe over 30 years ago and has recently found its way to the United States. And whereas the aim of this traffic calming concept is to eliminate the separation between pedestrian and vehicular areas and force vehicle drivers to slow and pay attention to pedestrian and cyclist traffic. And whereas this is allegedly accomplished by psychological traffic calming through the removal of curbs, sidewalks, signs, markings, and other traffic control devices to create a seamless, multi-purpose urban space. And whereas planners and engineers claim that the resulting uncertainty slows cars and is safer for pedestrians, and whereas the concept, whether accurate or not, is that without any clear right-of-way, motorists are forced to slow down to safer speeds, make eye contact with pedestrians, cyclists, and other drivers, and decide among themselves when it is safe to proceed. And whereas United States planners, engineers, and pedestrian advocates are experimenting with the shared space concept in many places such as West Palm Beach, Florida, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, and Avalon, California, hoping to obtain the safety and livability benefits for non-motorized users that characterize many old European cities. And whereas the sidewalk curb edge or any detectable line of demarcation, which is fundamental to the mobility of persons who are blind or visually impaired, is largely removed in shared space designs. And whereas such removal exposes blind and visually impaired pedestrians to greater risk, can undermine their confidence, and thus creates a barrier to their independent and safe mobility. And whereas the United Kingdom, UK, and Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, GDBA, a member of the Joint Committee on Mobility of Blind and partially sighted people has undertaken research, shared surface street design research project. The issues, report of focus groups, September 2006, looking at the experiences of persons who are blind, visually impaired, or disabled in shared space areas to assess the risks and impact that these schemes have on their ability to move independently and safely. In summary, the findings were that persons with sensory, intellectual, or mobility disabilities, as well as children, may face significant barriers in negotiating a shared space that relies on eye contact and a mutual understanding between motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians. And whereas the GDBA commissioned international designers to consider how the requirements of persons who are blind or visually impaired could be accommodated with the shared space concept, they came up with the idea of a safe space equivalent to the traditional footpath within the shared space, which would afford vulnerable pedestrians some protection. This would not prevent the rest of the area being shared by motorists, cyclists, and those pedestrians able and willing to do that. None of the visual tactile delineators tested to outline the safe space could be recommended for use in the pedestrian environment. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization instruct its chapter and special interest affiliates when working with local officials that they are encouraged to remind these authorities of their obligation under the Americans with Disabilities Act not to create town centers and streets that have barriers to the free and independent movement of people with disabilities, and to recognize the importance of providing a safe space for pedestrians in all street environments. And be it further resolved that this organization call upon all traffic planning entities to issue clear guidance to their designers, engineers, and planners that until issues concerning the safety of blind, visually impaired, and other disabled pedestrians can be resolved, the removal of clear lines of demarcation between pedestrian and vehicle ways is not to be permitted. And be it further resolved that in order to decrease the adverse effects of shared spaces on people with disabilities, recommendations shall be developed by the CCB Committee on Access and Transportation and attached to this resolution when disseminated. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Discussion.
Chairman?
Yes. Yeah, Judy? Welcome back. It's good to see you, Judy.
I'm a little confused about actually what this resolution wants anybody to do, particularly the first result where somebody's instructed, the chapters are instructed, and then they're asked to, there's two words, there's instructed and something else. And as an English teacher, I want to know whether I'm being instructed or asked.
Gabe is Getting to that point in the resolution.
You're right. It does say, resolve that this organization instruct its chapters and special interest affiliates when working with the local officials
to
that they are encouraged to remind...
You're instructed to be encouraged?
Okay, do you want to propose an amendment to change instruct to just encourage at the beginning, to encourage
something
its chapters?
Something like that, but then, you're encouraging people to encourage.
Well, I know. Yeah.
What I'm just going to suggest
is... Ask its chapters. Do you want to ask?
And then maybe we can just get rid of the second part where it says that they are encouraged and just say that... to remind these authorities.
Yeah, I trust that the committee will.
Okay.
You know, you always clean up for grammar, and
yes.
But it is it is the instruct is too strong.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you,
Mr. President or Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I agree that we should have ask there. We don't. I think we should always avoid.
We will encourage.
Leave encourage.
We will encourage.
Go. Yeah, but
yes,
I don't
yes.
think we want to be instructing.
Okay. Let's go to Mitch.
We're now encouraging.
Mitch is first, and then somebody else.
Seems to me we're missing the key point to this resolution. The guidelines that are developed by the Committee on Access and Transportation, once that document is finalized, ought to be referred to the U.S. Access Board. They have a little bit to say about this.
Gene, are you still in the room?
Yeah.
Would you mind responding to Mr. Pomerantz?
This resolution is almost identical to the one that passed at ACB National.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes. And in that one, there was a resolve which was, I'm talking about the American Council of Blinds, for the American Council of Blind to petition the U.S. Access Board to conduct research and the findings to be incorporated in the public right-of-way guidelines that might be issued next year, the year after that. The thing is, I didn't think it was appropriate for us to put in there since we shouldn't be petitioning the U.S. Access Board.
Hold on, Mitch, let me clarify something. I thought in committee we decided that what we were going to do here is to say that the research recommendations that we referred to in the resolution would be attached when the resolution was disseminated. That's not what
and that's what it says. I believe it is.
That does in the
It didn't quite say that.
It said that they be developed and attached to
but
this resolution
be
when
developed.
Disseminated.
They're already developed.
But I think what happened, Jeff, after you left committee was that in looking at those, I think there was a little more that tweaking in those recommendations.
Okay, then you need to clarify because I think Mitch and I are both confused.
Please. I was trying to respond to Mitch's question.
Sure.
Go ahead, Gene.
Okay. We have a list, Mitch and others. We have a list of recommendations that we've gotten from a variety of different sources based on research, not just personal opinions. And those, it was felt by some of them that they wanted some wordsmithing editing. But we basically have something that we can attach within a week or two to this document. They're just a cleanup thing. And the reason why we're not waiting for ACB is we know of the recent mishap of Ms. Beatty, and that when I'm talking to Debbie Grubb, it was felt that for the to develop the white paper on that would probably take some time. I'm right now, and others are getting a lot of requests here in the state of California for something immediate from our organization with some guidelines that they could at least consider. There's a lot of communities doing it, so we're trying to do something really time-sensitive.
All right, I understand. All I'm saying is that last summer's resolution asked the Access Board to do some research. All I'm saying is that if you and the CAT committee are going to put something together to disseminate around California, that perhaps the Access Board, through our Environmental Access Committee on which you sit, be in a position to also forward that information to the access board as well.
Yeah, Mitch, those recommendations were actually in the initial draft of that resolution last summer, and they were taken out because we wanted to give the ACB committee a chance to formulate their own. So this is consistent in a sense with what happened there.
And we have shared those with EAC, and we will, after we refine these, the wording, things like that, all again resent it to EAC.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This,
Kathy?
If it ever happened, would be a terrible thing. We need to do everything, anything, and everything we can do to get this stopped. And I hope we're going to pass this resolution. And I call for the question.
Okay. Wait a minute. I know there was somebody else back there who did want the floor already. And so I think it was Lisa?
Linda.
Was it Linda? Okay.
Linda.
Okay. We've already had an incident in San Francisco where the city came to us. They're trying to put something like this in place on Treasure Island. It would have been extremely useful to have something of this nature to bring to a discussion. So I'm in favor of the resolution because it gives us something to work with, since these things are already being proposed and considered. At least we can add something intelligent.
Anyone else that, you know, if you're for the resolution, we don't... Okay.
Steve Mendelson here. I think all of us certainly agree on the principles surrounding this resolution. I think, though, it's important, if we're going to pass a resolution like this, to make certain that it identifies and attacks all the proper points of leverage. And it seems to me there is also no objection to a state affiliate making recommendations to or requests of federal agencies. In that light, I would like to suggest that the resolution be amended to reflect also that an appropriate declaratory requests be made for an opinion by the Justice Department regarding the consistency of these kinds of designs with the ADA, and to the Department of Transportation with regard to certain parallel regulations implementing the ADA that the Transportation Department has developed over the years, and lastly, that the resolution include a request that suitable inquiries and representations be made to the California State Architect.
Okay, so that I would assume is not a friendly amendment. Are you making it as an amendment? I'm not saying it's bad or good.
Yes,
I'm just saying it's not friendly.
I'm making it as an amendment.
All right. Is there a second?
Very friendly.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment.
Point of clarification.
Yes.
Steve, I would only say that not to the Department of Justice. They would refer it to the Department of Transportation. It would be DOT, I think, who would need to interpret it in view of their ADA guidelines, which are slightly different than what the Access Board and Justice has. But I think strictly this is a DOT issue.
Okay, so is that a friendly amendment to your amendment, Steve? Are you willing to incorporate that?
I believe there are grounds for involving both.
Okay, we got the state architect. Okay. All right, so that'll be a friendly amendment. Any discussion on the amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I hope Steve can.
Just a comment.
I didn't get it.
And Steve, can you restate your amendment?
Let's get.
Wait a minute, Gene. Let's let Steve restate the amendment, and then you get your point of information.
I'm merely suggesting what I think is hopefully a simple amendment, and I do so, which is that our outreach in regard to this matter not be limited to the Access Board, but that it include the U.S. Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Wait a minute, Steve, I don't think that's specific enough.
Right.
If you're telling us to send it to somebody, that's one thing. If you're telling us to ask somebody to do something, that's another thing. You need to be...
All right. That... The resolution be amended to include that we request that the legality of these proposed designs be reviewed by the U.S. Department of Justice, ADA section, by the Department of Transportation, and by the California State Architect with respect to determining their compliance with existing civil rights laws.
Steve, did you not accept the friendly amendment to get rid of Justice and leave it for Transportation?
I believe they both have a role. So
okay, so that a friendly amendment is not viewed as a friendly amendment. Mitch, are you willing to not push this amendment to the amendment? Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Gene.
First, it's totally out of the arena of the Division State Architect. They have no authority over it. Secondly, right now it does not exist in law at all, this whole shared space concept. So I don't know how they're going to quite interpret this, and I think that is, and I don't want to overstep the ACB, which deals more with the national issues. I think it would be more appropriate for ACB, if there was going to be any interpretation with the U.S. Department of Transportation or U.S. Department of Justice, that it's be done by them. We are needing something right now that we can put in the hands of chapters, special interest groups, that they have something when these issues occur in their communities right now, they can give it to them. I think, you know, we can get interpretation of things, but we don't need something to hold the getting this out as soon as possible.
Okay. Further discussion?
Comment.
Hearing none.
Comment.
Okay. We heard a comment back there.
Farrell Brown, Santa Rosa.
Uh-huh.
Burl? I think it's imperative that this be out as soon as possible. We are
not. Wait, oh, Burl, it's only on the amendment. On the amendment.
Okay.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment was defeated. Okay. Boy, I don't think so.
No, I think that
The amendment was defeated.
I think from up here I heard more no's.
If there's 25 needed for a roll call, you can have one, but I don't think it would pass.
Mr. President?
Yes.
Is there any reason we couldn't do it with hands up to be counted?
It's not valid in our Constitution. Can't.
Try it again with everybody just speaking in normal voice.
All right, I am willing to do the vote one more time. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment has been defeated.
That was clear.
Thank you. Okay, we're back to the motion, the main motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Okay, next resolution. The resolution has been adopted.
Okay. Resolution 2009-B7 is Furlough Fridays for Rehab Counselors. And this came to us from the Rehab Committee. Whereas rehabilitation counselors who work for the state of California are currently being furloughed on the three Fridays of each month, and whereas these furloughs interfere with the prompt delivery of services to clients by rehabilitation counselors, and whereas under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, services are to be delivered without delay, and whereas these furloughs create delays in service delivery, potentially contributing to poor vocational outcomes. And whereas, in addition, these furloughs delay and reduce referrals to service agencies that are vendorized through the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, to serve individuals with blindness or visual impairments. And whereas one-time federal stimulus funds have been acquired by DOR for the increased employment of clients and must be fully allocated by December 31st, 2011, and whereas the fiscal impact of these furloughs to clients can have a devastating impact, and whereas the Social Security Administration, SSA, has a similar mandate as Rehabilitation Services Administration, RSA, to provide services without delay, And whereas SSA has filed a statement in Alameda County Superior Court to exempt its state-employed disability evaluators from being furloughed 3 Fridays per month. And whereas these furloughs have hindered Social Security's ability to meet its obligations and responsibilities to its clients, now therefore be it resolved that this organization encourage RSA to take legal action similar to that of SSA. Committee recommend a do pass, and I so move.
Okay, there's a motion. The president has a concern first. I was not going to speak against this resolution, and I'm not, but I do think there needs to be a whereas clause stricken. And that is that there is a similar mandate. Maybe it's similar, but it's only vaguely similar. The Social Security Administration mandate is much more specific, much more binding on the Department of Social Services. And I, for one, as your president, don't want to send out something that I think is legally not quite correct. So I would strongly ask that if this resolution is going to pass, that that whereas clause be stricken. So I would, if someone would like to propose an amendment to that, I would, or if it's accepted as a friendly amendment, I would appreciate it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Well, let's resolve this issue first.
Yeah, I'd be if you, you know, we weren't sure. So with your statement that or with your point that is not legally accurate, I'd be willing to accept that as friendly amendment to strike that whereas.
Okay. All right. Kathy spoke first.
I just kind of need something clarified. I think it's fine to ask. Well, I was thinking from the beginning someone should file something legally because this is not something that DOR could change. This has been mandated by, am I not right? This is law from the man in the big chair up there, isn't it, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should, the legal thing should happen is right, and I'm not sure which clause you're striking, but that's still in there to have someone file. I think we need to concentrate on, if we're going to talk about rehab counselors, I don't quite understand why we're involving Social Security.
The reason that Social Security is in there is because it's the one instance where a federal agency has at least intervened on paper. They didn't file the lawsuit, but they did file a statement that said they weren't doing enough. And so the makers of this resolution want RSA to do likewise and, you know, state that the state is not doing enough because of the furloughs. So
and that's taking legal action, right?
Well, it wouldn't be them to take the legal action. It would be them to support some kind of legal action or whatever.
Is it strong enough?
I don't want to comment. I'll let the makers of the resolution comment on it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Dan?
Okay,
let's get the mic to you.
The Social Security entity in question is subsidizing the state salaries of those individuals. They're contracting to the state. So that's a different situation than general fund money that goes out. Granted, there's federal subsidies that go into the rehab program, but the funding structure, I think, precludes this resolution, and I think that you'd lose a lawsuit.
Well, we're not filing a lawsuit, so we're not. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with what you said, Dan. I'm just saying. I agree with you, Lisa.
Can I use the mic first?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think the furloughs are hard for everybody in every department, and I've had trouble with my rehab counselor too, but I think in a time of budget cuts when, you know, married couples on SSI are getting cut $82, $78 per person, and people who really need IHS are getting cut off. I think that if every state agency that was unable to deliver services to consumers as well because of the furloughs, if all of those furloughs were stopped, I think we would be experiencing a lot more cuts.
So I'm unfortunately really sorry that these furloughs are hurting people, but I would have to speak against the resolution.
Okay. Whoa. I heard Jerry, I think. Erica.
Mr. President, I don't want to. Obviously, the furloughs represent a hardship to everyone, and I personally agree with the spirit of the resolution. But I had a question about an additional whereas. A number of unions have filed suits to stop this furlough, and I wondered if the makers of the resolution had thought of a whereas clause to either participate in one of the numerous lawsuits or to sign on with a amicus brief, and is that something that was considered?
Okay.
Yeah.
For sure, whoever.
This is Christy. I'm not okay. I'm aware of that, and the union that rehab counselors belong to, and the reason I'm speaking is because I'm in the same union. We did not file. However, we are on the same page as the unions who have filed.
Okay. Next.
But I wanted to.
Wait a minute. Jerry is asking.
I'm asking a question, Christy. If the committee would object to an additional whereas to join any current lawsuit.
That would be resolved.
I'm sorry. In the resolve clause, rather.
I don't think I have an issue with it because it's. You know, I think it's saying taking similar legal action, trying to stop this.
What do the current resolves say right now? I think it'd be important to hear, so that people know what they say.
It currently says, resolved that this organization encourage RSA to take legal action similar to that of RSA. Jerry would.
SSA.
Or SSA. I wonder if just saying legal action, what if we ended it actually?
No, that would be a different, that would definitely be a different and far more broad resolution. And Jerry, you can propose that amendment.
I would propose that a resolve clause be added saying that the CCB is strongly encouraged, or that the California Council of the Blind will investigate or will join current efforts, including legal action, including a lawsuit, to encourage the cessation of these furloughs.
And, state it again.
That this CCB, council, the CCB, should join lawsuits, any existing lawsuit that is designed to stop the continuance of these furloughs. I don't want to get into specifics because I whether that be as I say, to file an amicus brief or to participate as a full participant of the suit. But I think that.
So we're to investigate it. We're to join it.
I'd say to join.
So we're to join lawsuits. Okay.
That changes the whole.
It. I would say that definitely changes the whole import of this resolution, and leads to a conclusion that those lawsuits are correct when they may or may not be. But it is. You know, it is certainly not ungermane, so I will not rule it out of order. But it is certainly broadening what this resolution is asking for to a large degree.
What if,
so you need a second.
How about using the word support?
It's still broadening it to a large degree.
What does investigate do?
Investigate does nothing, and that's why he took out investigate. He put in join.
Right.
Because investigate would really mean nothing. Okay, whoa. We have join. Is there a second to the amendment? It died for lack of a second.
Okay, fine.
Join in the lawsuits. That's what he said.
That's fine. If, okay. I recognize that there are some, obviously, some considerable changes that would happen in the lawsuit, but I know the spirit of the resolution is that, you know, to do something that's really significant to stop this furlough.
For okay, all right. Your amendment has died, for lack of a second, Jerry. Okay, any further discussion?
Yes, this is Christy Crespin. I am also furloughed through the Department of Mental Health. However, my furlough does not affect the lives of persons with disabilities to the same extent that vocational rehabilitation counselors' furloughs affect. We have floating days. Our offices, you know, can't close because we're a 24/7 facility. But every time the offices are closed and the Department of Rehabilitation work doesn't get done, people don't get paid, and it really does result in homelessness, in service providers not being able to get the funding. In service slowage or stoppage, and I really do believe that these furloughs for vocational rehabilitation counselors need to stop. Not only that, but it also is affected by federal concerns because of the 78% federal funds that are given to the Department of Rehabilitation.
Okay, thank you, Christy.
Mr. President, point of information.
Point of information, and then we're going to have the question here.
Do you feel that it would be helpful to add a clause to say that we file an amicus brief? We could outline the problems, stress it more, but would that...
I honestly don't know because I don't know the merits of the lawsuits, and I honestly don't know. I'm not qualified to say what the particular lawsuit would go to. I don't know that the rehab lawsuit would have the same legal gravity that an SSA one would, but you know, it's very hard to know.
Call for the question.
All right. All those in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The resolution is adopted.
Okay. Resolution 2009-B8 is United States Postal Service and Business Enterprise Program. This came to us from Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California. Whereas the United States Postal Service, USPS, contract opportunity for the Business Enterprise Program, BEP, has been known by the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, for at least 2 years. And whereas this opportunity has been very successful in states such as Texas, Illinois, and Pennsylvania, and whereas this opportunity has generated a very significant source of income for the aforementioned states' BEP vendors, and whereas the considerable income generated by the USPS contracts has enabled the Texas BEP to pay for all of its vendors' set aside fees, and whereas the California BEP is in an extreme financial crisis to the point of not being able to repair or purchase equipment, and whereas the California Vendors Policy Committee, a federally mandated committee, has submitted several written motions requesting that DOR finalize the contract with USPS, and whereas the overall plan for the USPS contract has been under review by the DOR legal department for several months, and whereas the department has stated that they are understaffed and therefore unable to develop the USPS contract, and whereas DOR has refused to investigate outsourcing options to resolve the staffing issues. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization strongly urge DOR to immediately complete and implement the USPS contract. The committee recommends it do pass, and I so move.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The resolution is adopted. Now, Gabe has one more substantive resolution, and then we have the two form ones, and Gabe also has a train to catch. So I would entertain a motion, just as we do at National frequently, to adopt the resolution, the resolutions commending the outstanding volunteers and the staff en masse without their reading.
So moved.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And let's hear it for those resolutions. The staff were great. The volunteers were great. The hotel staff just loved us. They'd like us back anytime, I'll tell you.
They've been great here.
Yeah. Okay. Gabe, you're back.
Resolution 2009-B9 is fiscal reports for BEP, and it's also brought to us by RSVC. Whereas the California Council of the Blind passed Resolution 2009-A9, Randolph Shepherd Vendor Communications, and whereas, is that me?
That's
okay. And whereas this resolution was sent to Tony Sauer, Director, Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, and whereas this resolution requested that a quarterly fiscal solvency report be given to all business enterprise program, BEP, vendors in their preferred formats by the BEP program manager in accordance with the Randolph-Shepherd Act as amended. And whereas Director Sauer, in his letter published in the summer 2009 issue of the Blind Californian, stated that the department was in compliance with this resolution. And whereas this requirement to provide quarterly fiscal solvency reports has not been complied with by BEP, now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization insists that BEP comply with the provisions of the Randolph-Shepherd Act as amended to make available quarterly fiscal solvency reports in a vendor's preferred formats by the next reporting period. And be it further resolved that if BEP does not comply with this provision, that this organization pursue appropriate remedies, including potential legal action. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay. Now, I may have inadvertently stated, you have one more resolution, right, Gabe?
We have this one and then one more.
Okay. I want to make sure. Okay. Mr. Pomerantz is asked for the floor.
For whatever it's worth, I would suggest perhaps another resolve clause that a copy of this resolution also go to the director of the health and welfare agency wherein the Department of Rehabilitation is located.
All right. Cannot hurt. I think that's a friendly amendment. Not that they help very much, but it can't hurt. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Resolution is adopted, and now we're to the last resolution.
Okay, number 10 was dealing with websites of supermarkets, and that one has been withdrawn for further research and consideration. Resolution 2009-B11 is entertainment industry discrimination, and this was written and submitted by Frank Welty. Whereas the entertainment industry is a substantial component of California's economy, and whereas pervasive discrimination against people who are blind or visually impaired exists throughout the entertainment industry, both in the employment of individuals and portrayal of characters who are blind or visually impaired. And whereas through its I Am PWD campaign, the Tri-Union National Committee of Performers with Disabilities has produced renewed commitments by all three talent guilds to improve employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization endorsed the I Am PWD campaign. And be it further resolved that this organization urged that the entertainment industry take immediate steps to achieve the following. 1. Increased representation of characters who are blind or visually impaired. 2. More accurate portrayals of characters who are blind or visually impaired. 3. More employment opportunities for professionals who are blind or visually impaired. 4. More actors who are blind or visually impaired portraying characters who are blind or visually impaired, and fewer sighted actors portraying characters who are blind or visually impaired. 5. Equal opportunities for actors who are blind or visually impaired to both audition for and portray characters not written as blind or visually impaired. And be it further resolved that copies of this resolution be sent to appropriate governmental and industry organizations. And be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be sent to the American Council of the Blind for consideration at its 2010 National Convention. Committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay. I would like to propose 2 amendments. And I think they'll both be friendly. The first one is I would like to eliminate the resolved about endorsing the campaign and change the whereas to say that in an organization in which CCB is a member, because we are actually a member of the IMPWD. I mean, we can keep the endorsement if we want, but it's almost implicit.
I
don't have a problem with
that.
We
discussed this last night, and it was mentioned that the board of directors had voted, I think, one of our last convention board meetings to sign on to that. So we were.
So why don't
not
we?
Sure if we
how
needed.
About?
So I would accept that those as friendly amendments.
We could keep the endorsement if you want, but put either that we are a member in the resolve. I mean, in the whereas at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. The other amendment which I'd like to propose is that I would like to seek a joint legislative hearing on the problems outlined in the resolution.
That was the intent of my original language regarding the list of committees in the legislature.
Okay.
So was it seek a joint
legislative? Joint legislative, state legislative hearing on the problems outlined in this resolution.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any discussion?
Point of emphasis.
Did I understand correctly that it referred to employment in the industry as well as the characterizations, but that only the delineations that were cited were about representing blind and visually impaired people in acting and representation?
No, it's all facets of the industry.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? The resolution is adopted. That'll give Frank and some folks a lot of work because it's really important. Okay.
Mr. President?
Yes.
That concludes the resolutions committee report.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion to accept the report of the resolutions committee? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Thank you, great resolutions committee. Excellent job. Excellent job. Do we have any committees that want to provide brief reports? Hearing none. Do we have old business? Do we have new business? Yes, we have Avi Schumann.
I was just handed a certificate saying that I'm a lifetime member now. I'd like to thank the organization, and I'd like to warn you people, life begins at 40. I just hit 80, which means you got another 40 years that you're stuck
with. All right, Avi. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So no new business. So we will see all of you, I hope, in mid-April, April 15th to 18th, at the Crown Plaza SFO in Burlingame. And with that, the 75th anniversary convention of the California Council of Blind is not yet. We need a motion. We need a motion. The motion. There's a second. All those in favors. All those opposed. Abstentions. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.